Where do I fit? What is my place? Is it half caste? Mixed race? Brown? Tan? Black? White? But was never just black or white. It was a grey area with a silver lining. It was in between the lines I found myself hiding. My name is Adam Muhammad. I'm named after the first male and the prophet, Christian and Muslim. You wanna know where I come from? It's the jungle, the concrete jungle. See, these days, different is cool. It wasn't when I was in school. I carried a burden, the lions were blurred in. Hate from mates was turned inside and stored in. Like, why don't I have pure skin? Why does my hair curl in? Do I pray on a mat or at mass? Take an Easter feast or a Ramadan fast? Learn about Sudan's dodgy sands or Bobby Sands? See, there's too many contradictions that cause afflictions. The only way out is to find your way out. Through the shame and pain, my mind frame sprouts. From why don't I have pure skin? My skin is the purest, one with all that exists. Pure bliss. I'm that Northside newbie, so stand aside and see the beauty in the space that I create for myself to be in. We call it an up the flats mentality from an African magistrate. And while the flats eroded and crumbled, I arose triumphant with the spirit of Dublin and Khartoum. Salam alaikum. Cut on scale. If you can't see through the veil, then down the veil. Because all in all, we have more in common than different. That doesn't make for headlines or sound bites. White privilege, black power, it's all lives matter. White guilt, or black shame, sure it's all pain. We look left and right, but there's little truth in absolutes. So we stay in the centre, but never on the fence. And that's not being spiteful, but some things are just best left untitled.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking. We're actually talking a bit of art, Martin. Would you know what art is?
I do. I've been to a play once or twice, Tony.
I keep forgetting you were actually brought up well, and then you just
Oh, you can't leave it alone, can you? It's like a scab he has to keep picking at, isn't it?
A big six-bedroom mansion in Port Marlock, and now he's in Ashbourne. We have to remind listeners, Tortoise Shack putting out a lot of content at the moment, but totally listener-led. Put no ads, no sponsors, rely on you guys. So it's patreon.com/Tortoise Shack. It's the price of a cup of coffee, and it keeps us going. Just before we started, I hope you've listened to the lead-in to a brilliant piece by a young man from up the road in Ballymun, Adam Muhammad. And we are delighted to be joined by the Northside newbie now. Adam, how are you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good. Look, thanks for doing this. We're also joined by a radical activist and ne'er-do-well, Dean Scurry. Dean, how are things? It's been a while.
It's been a while, but it's great. It's great to see you. And just to reiterate your point, if people find value in this podcast or any podcast, and it's good for your mental health, if it's helping you get through the COVID, put £3 a week into it and keep these guys going. I'm doing amazing, and it's great to see you.
Good to see you, buddy. Good to see you. Listen, I'm going to go straight into the piece Untitled. Adam, I know you obviously wrote it. Dean, you helped produce it and direct it, the accompanying video, and it's brilliant. And I say that just as someone who's from Ballymun and had a bit of chills looking at it, but it's a very different Ballymun to when I was there in 1979. It is very, very different. Adam, can I ask you straight off, why spoken word? Where does that come from for a guy who does MMA?
I think just the piece itself, just kind of the stuff that I'm talking about. I think the spoken word format was just the best way to deliver it, so that kind of every word is heard and felt, and it's kind of like a conversation, kind of like I'm speaking to the listener. So I just thought spoken word was the best way to deliver it. Like, could have done a rap or whatever, but I think the message might get lost in the boom bap and the boom boom.
Yeah, no, I accept that. It's just it's an unusual. Like, I mean, there was a bit of a renaissance of spoken word, and I know things like we see Stephen James, we've seen Emmett Kieran, we've seen a lot of guys, and you know, they've done some really great pieces. If you remember around Repeal, Heartbreak was really influential in the Repeal campaign, but this piece itself, it seems very personal.
Yeah. It is very personal to me because it's kind of all, you know, speaking about my journey and, you know, kind of where I came from and where I am now and, you know, kind of where I'm going. So, yeah, it is very personal to me, but I think it's kind of stuff that I'm talking about, it's kind of universal, which is what we figured out kind of halfway through it, is that kind of, you know, a lot of people relate to it because, you know, it might be different.
Yeah,
we're all going on different journeys, but it's the same at the end of the day, isn't it? We're all just trying to, you know, be the best versions of ourselves.
I get that, and but I also know that looking at it, that I'm reminded of we had Sarah El Said on nearly 2 years ago, Martin, I think, and she talked about, you know, people going working in a restaurant and serving someone, and someone saying, "Where are you from?" And she'd go Santry, and she'd go, "No, where are you really from?" You know, and our dad had come over, like decades before to work for Team Aer Lingus, and she's like, "No, I'm from Santry." You know, and that comes across in it as well when you talk about when you were in school, that you, that kind of. The idea of belonging, you know, you said different is great now, but it's not, but it wasn't cool, not when I was in school. You must have seen that demographic change in front of your eyes.
Yeah, well, when I was in school, we went to OLV, Our Lady of Victories in Ballymun.
So did I.
And when So when we went, I'm sure when you went to school, there was no one there looking like me.
No.
So when I was in school, I was still kind of the only one there looking at me. So that's what I kind of say. It's like, not really carrying a burden, but it's like, you know, different. There wasn't that kind of diverseness when I was in school. And it kind of, you know, obviously young kids, they're going to look at me as like, why does this fella not look the way I do? And then that's going to, like, people from Ballymun, obviously, there's going to be slaggings thrown around, no matter if you're, you know, you have red hair, glasses, whatever. So that's what was aimed at me. That I look different, and then I'd have to like take that with a pinch of salt, kind of.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about what Adam done is that it's not giving out about this situation. He's just saying this is the way it was. There was me in my situation, good, bad, or ugly. That's the way it was, and it's kind of a call and response to Denise Choyla's question: where are you from? No, where are you really from?
Mm.
You know, and I think that. I would have discussed that video with some of my mates going, what is this? And why do I feel certain ways when I hear it? You know what I mean? What is that asking me? And what kind of statement is that? And I think from talking to Adam that he kind of digested that for a couple of months and then said, okay, well, where am I from? Who am I? What do I do? What am I made of? And what does it matter?
Dean, would you have? You're a long time in Ballymun, a very, very long time in Ballymun. And I remember back, you know, in Chunkla, Ballymun was always a very mixed, it might have been very white, but it was always a very mixed area. People came from the country, they came from the city, and they moved into Ballymun, and it was like a new community, but they coalesced as a community.
Yeah, definitely. Community is what we have in buckets. Absolutely, that's the strength of a place like Ballymun. And whatever way it was thrown together or devised, community is what emerged from it. Because as a survival strategy, you know?
And it's always been a very proud community, regardless of how underfunded or underdeveloped the area is. Ballymun is a proud community, but it's also a community that takes care of its own. And I suppose, Adam, that's where I was going to ask you. Do you feel part of the Ballymun community?
100%. Like, from growing up, just the amount of stuff that I was involved in. I was thinking about this, and that's why the kind of video, it's important that was shot in Ballymun, in the places where I would have been, like, it was shot in the old school, in OLV. We shot a bit in the Reco. We shot in SVG, Charlestown, you know, with kind of on Ronnie's permission. And yeah, like, just the stuff that we've been involved in throughout my life in, like, in school, Paddy Christie would have taught me, and that would have been, you know, he would have been, you know, kind of a person that, you know, had a good influence on me. And then in the Reco as well, Dean, I'd better tell you, Jason, I'm not sure of the second name, Jason with the glasses.
Jason with the glasses, that's his official title.
Jason with the glasses.
Yeah, but I hear that, and then you talk about the universal stuff in the thing where you talk about it gets a little bit, it gets political, Adam, in its own quiet messaging. You know, it gets, you use slogans, you use terms like All Lives Matter. You talk about the things that have actually been bubbling under the surface now. I'm assuming that now, and I mean, Dean, feel free to come in on this. I'm assuming these are the type of conversations you guys have had in terms of, you know, where the discourse is now, where it is in modern. It's, you know, it's much more than just slogans, I suppose.
Yeah, and like having a piece like this, I think helps us even use words like half caste or mixed race in context. Like recently, I was up in Drogheda and I was hanging around with some of the drill heads up there, because they're the young African black boys, and they seen Adam's piece and they refer to him as half caste. And I think that's interesting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because from one person's perspective, Adam is a black man. From another person's perspective, he's half caste. And then from my perspective is, it doesn't actually come into it. It doesn't actually matter. But then from someone like these guys, these drill heads, from their lived experience, to use that wanky phrase, they're not getting opportunities afforded to them that someone like me would as a Ballymunner because of their skin colour. So it opens up those conversations. It allows us to use phrases in context and from different perspectives. That's kind of like what I like to do, and they're the conversations I would have having with Adam. Let's look at stuff not just from our perspective, but let's, you know, put the shoes on or the hat on of other people, like black women in Ireland, you know.
Yeah, I and knowing that, and sorry, I'll come, Adam, you can come in now, but I will. This actually goes to you. It's like, it's great when you say that. It really is powerful when you see you saying it struck with such, you know, you're looking down the camera and you're saying it with such a strong authority to your voice. Whereas, you know, a white middle class straight man in sitting here, I can't say, I can't speak that for you. I can't speak. So it's about trying. I suppose that's where. When you said it, I did kind of get it. Was jarring, and it was really you know, I know, and it just shows you where, I don't know what the phraseology is, but when you do the other thing, you turned around and you did say, and it comes back to it, as you said, I look left, I look right, there's no, and you talk about absolute sitting and but not sitting on the fence. I'd be unapologetically of the left, okay, that's just my politics, but at the same time, I'm always looking to talk to people to broaden the debate. For you, was that part of the signal that, you know, we need to have these conversations?
Yeah, definitely have to have conversations with, you know, people that you may not agree with, people that you do agree with, but it's important that you're talking to people out, you know, outside of your zone, just to get, you know, a different perspective on things. And with the phrases that I was kind of saying as well, that some phrases are being used now, and it's just like they're being used kind of for the sake of it.
Yeah.
People are kind of using some phrases as a, I want to say, kind of like maybe a cop out, instead of actually, you know, dealing with something that's easy. It's easier to put a phrase on it than to.
It's easy to put a phrase on your Twitter bio and say I'm involved with this as well, without actually doing what that actually means, or without doing any of the legwork. And, you know, I'm very conscious of that, that we have that. But I just think it's, again, you know, I do think it's important that when we analyze the piece, it does actually challenge that perception that, we had John Amici on a few months ago, and he made a really good point about when he said about the value of, he played basketball in the NBA for the Utah Jazz. And he said if several black people were killed, I think he said actually if it would take a lot of black bodies to pile up for the level of discomfort that the society that he's talking about would have been if one white child had gone missing for an afternoon in the woods. And that was how, his lived experience of it as a 6'10" black man who happened to be gay and playing NBA basketball. I'm just conscious of, when you hear things like if someone says all lives matter, I kind of find that that's been weaponized. I disagree with it, because I think maybe some people are saying that, it without. And
that was the point of it. That was just the point of it. All lives matter. I mean, what's the phrase actually mean? What are you trying to say? A bit more depth instead of going to explain it a bit more instead of just throwing it out there, because this is just stuff that we see kind of, when I'm, on whatever social media and seeing all these phrases and kind of doing a bit more damage than good, just throwing them about.
And I think not only the white lives matter, whatever that is, which is kind of like a reaction. It's kind of, you're saying that, well, we're going to say this. I think even sometimes any phrases like Black Lives Matter, I think that can do damage if it's not fully explained, if there's no context. If our perception of it is that, if our perception of the person who delivers the message or received the message is threatening or whatever, you know what I mean? So I think that what you have done is you've put stuff into context, you've put stuff into perspective, you've shown your perception, and you look at what are the things we consent to unknowingly, in the back of our minds, in our blind spots, in our biases. I wanted to just say that there was the places that we filmed in Ballymun were meaningful to you, but I think how we shot it, it's like nobody knows really that was your school. Nobody knows that was the youth center. It was how you delivered it, how you put it together, and then just the honesty and nakedness of the shooting, I think, is the thing that Tony might be referring to when he got chills.
Yeah,
It is.
I genuinely know you've touched on it there, because, and again, I have the three dots on my elbow, on my arm from the old clinic up the road, and when you got your MMR shots and they gave you sugar cubes, and that's all dug down, that's all torn down now, and you're there with a horse, and I'm going, all of that there, all the backdrop of that looked completely different. So yeah, I'm sure I was on my own personal journey watching that, my own thing. Sorry, Martin. I know
exactly, and that's sorry to cut this across, but that was like, that was kind of what was important to get across in the video, that like, just I'm talking about the internal journey of like, obviously, like being the kind of going through the pain and shame and being the best version of yourself. The places that society say help that journey, i.e. school, churches, and mosques, sometimes those places kind of as well do a bit more damage than good to the individual. And it's the places like the youth center, the sea, the jiu-jitsu mat, where you embark on that journey fully. So that's what I got from the video as well, and I hope that people got from that as well.
Can I ask about inclusivity? And we've touched on it before, and particularly, I suppose, in the pandemic, during the middle of the pandemic, have you found that people have retreated into bubbles, whether it be bubbles of opinion or bubbles of influence, and that it's less inclusive than it was before the pandemic? Or do you think Ballymun in general is quite an inclusive spot?
I think Ballymun is open, an open book, if you ask me. That's just what I see. I don't think, from what I've seen, I don't think the pandemic has changed really anything here anyway, if you ask me. So
yeah, I do think we have a history of, if we're going to use Ballymun as an example, we have a history of needing to work together in community to survive. But we've also had a history of people exploiting that and you have kind of middle class ships in the night coming into the area. And Ballymun Regeneration Limited would be one of them, where we had €1 billion spent in our community, but 20% of all the homeless people in Dublin City are from Ballymun. So we have a bit of both, but we, as Adam said, Ballymun is open, you know, and I think people, middle class or whatever, who come to Ballymun or who live in Ballymun or who engage in Ballymun on a real level, they begin to get that. We have that. That's our default mode, is openness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whether or not that means inclusivity is that, you know, that's not the same thing to me. One is that whatever we need to do in order to make this work, we're going to do it. But that doesn't mean we need to make sure we tick every single box on the, you know, gender thing or the ethnic thing or whatever, you know. We'll make it work because we're kind of in that mode. We're in survival mode.
Dean, sorry, and I have to say this is the funny part of this, and it's the most serious part. It's that sometimes those conversations are a privilege. It's surely, you know, if you want to get on with your life, and then you want to be turning around and having that conversation about, like, you know, like, it's I see Martin was fighting with someone before we came on who has the whole thing on social media with Leinster rugby and all the rest of it going on, and I said you see, there's a level of privilege there that we won't understand, you know. It's if that's the thing that you're going to get most concerned about in the world, lucky you, you know. Lucky.
Yeah, and I had first-hand experience of it when I was, we're getting political now, when I was setting up the first initial meetings for a Home Sweet Home. It was like, oh, you need to have half women and half men. I was like, we don't have that privilege. He said, we're knee-deep in homelessness here. Let us get on with it. Or we have, for example, the Sinn Féin thing of a 32-county socialist republic, but we're knee-deep in homelessness. There's certain things that we just need to get sorted, you know, drug addiction, poverty, homelessness, and so on. And I think that now we're starting to get that with race and with colour and with ethnicity and identity and so on. And I think that Ballymun is going to do it our way. We're not going to wait to be led down that road by somebody else. We're going to explore that territory ourselves in the way that we do it.
And is there a class element to it, then?
I don't know. Ask the question in a different way, because I'm not sure where that's leading me.
Okay. Do you think that people in Ballymun work better together as a society because poverty is a unifying factor within Ballymun?
That's definitely a statement that I would agree with. Yeah, definitely. But I think, like, for the 3 years previous to this, I would have done work with loyalists and unionists and people in Ballymun. And I would have invited loyalists and unionists and Protestants down to Ballymun, and we'd have conversations, because I was afraid that we would kick back off into violence. So we'd have these maybe 3 or 4 meetings every year for the last couple of years, just done it myself with a priest mate of mine from Northern Ireland. And what we all kind of concluded was that the one thing that we have, well, we've more things in common than we have than divide us, and the one thing that we have in common is poverty. So let's not be playing to the tune of some millionaires or billionaires or imperial masters or whatever.
And I think we've arrived at the nub of it. And back to Adam's piece again. A lot of the piece is when you talk about that piece, about your travel, you talk about, you know, the spirit of Khartoum, and you talk about all of your own personal journey, and then you talk about it in the broad world sense. In the world sense, part of the problem we're finding now is what has been called culture wars. But a lot of it is actually just, as Dean has outlined there, ways of actually putting us all apart, different, you know, putting us in our little silos, and causing these people to say, well, we don't associate with them, or there's with the narcissism of small differences. And we find this on the left a lot, as people say. They say, why does the left never get on? Because the first thing on the agenda is always the split. And I wish that wasn't so true, because it can be very, very true when people sit down and they'll say, you know, they'll talk about obscure theories. But those theories, as Dean has said, won't matter if it's not helping homelessness. So Adam, as a young man, as a person of color, as someone who's into MMA and doing spoken word, where does that all fit in the world when you're talking to your peers, your contemporaries? How do you have those? Is these the type of things that people understand now that stuff is bullshit? We need to actually just get on with actually getting on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's seen all over the place. I mean, that the conversations are changing, and kind of stuff that, you know, say like the old kind of stuff that would have held us back in the past. I mean, just as a country, like kind of shame, inferiority. I don't know if it's from, you know, from the church or from the Brits, the Irish people, you know, there's something built in there, and I feel like it's kind of being lifted. You see it in the music that's out these days, like you mentioned Denise Choyle and that dual citizenship, Shemba Dunleavy as well, singing about, you know, being from the flats. So the conversations are definitely changing for the better, and, you know, it's kind of, I feel like it's people in the kind of not my age group, but peer group that are, you know, having these conversations, pushing them forward, and you know, it's an open dialogue, like it's
it's pretty great to see that those conversations happening, but it's also in an Ireland whereby you look at the people who actually run the place, you know, and it doesn't look like that Ireland, you know, you don't see it's,
sorry, yeah, and the other thing is
yeah,
the other
true,
thing is,
true,
is,
yeah.
Is that they run the place as much as we let them run the place, whoever they are. You know what I mean? So, and that's the reality. And we can allow mommy and daddy to call all the shots because we haven't fully developed our voice, or because we want to remain insecure or comfortably numb. And there's a line smack bang in the middle of Adam's piece I'm reading here. There's too many contradictions that cause afflictions. The only way out is to find a way out. And that is us taking action. And that's where what I do comes from. It's activism. I can sit around and complain and bitch and not use my democracy and not use my vote and not use my voice. But I have sussed out that I have the right to remain vocal. I have the right to take actions. And what Adam is doing is he's no longer remaining silent. Like he's not a young boy. What age, Adam? 28 years of age?
25
years of age. So it's taken him onto 25 years of age to live this and to vocalize this. You know what I mean? Now, for me, it's a perfect time because he has allowed himself to grow up and mature. And sometimes we get 16, 17, 18-year-old boys rapping about, you know, misogyny or homosexuality or killing people and so on. Adam has matured. And now he's ready to speak and open his mouth and have his voice and get involved. And I think that's an interesting lesson in that for us as a country, because I think all too often we tend towards juvenility rather than mature conversations.
I think we're
100%.
I think we're pushed to juvenility, Dean. You know, 20 years ago, you were an adult at 18. Now you're not considered an adult till you're nearly 30. You know, and that's that's the government making infants of people, and they do it through the social welfare system, they do it through many other systems. And it's one thing that strikes me a lot is that if you see a report about a person of color, they're talking about a man. But if it's a white guy the same age who's done the same thing wrong, he's a young man, or, you know, he's somehow not matured. There's kind of a let off in there. But, you know, at 25 years of age, you're an adult. At 18 years of age, you're an adult. But this constant making children of
I think Martin, what we're talking again is this. This dichotomy that if what you've seen in the UK particularly, where say a footballer who is take Raheem Sterling buys a few houses and he said he's thrown his money around, and then another a white guy does it and they say he's looking after his family's future. So there is that, but at the same time, to bring it back to the Irish context, we see it when someone from a different political party, for example, goes off to a Trump rally and you come back and people say, leave him alone.
The poor young man.
Leave him alone. He's just a young man. And he's the same age as Adam. And whereas if a fella, whether he is a person of color or a I'm gonna use the terms like I say, he's a gouger or he's a troublemaker. If he does gets in trouble, that's what he is. Then you know what I mean. So there's a there are different standards. Yeah, absolutely, there are. But again,
and we can use name calling or nicknames to avoid taking responsibility. Yeah. Mm. So I met a fella recently, and he was depressed, and he wanted to kill himself, and I invited him down for a swim, and his mates were calling him his nickname. And I said, well, what is your name? You know what I mean? And he told me his name. And they said, okay, let's say his name was James. I say, okay, James. So where are you? What do you want to do? You know what I mean? And and he wasn't called Mixer or Wapser or whatever, you know? We addressed him by who he was and allowed him to take ownership of who he is. And that's kind of what, I'm harping back to Adam's piece again. That's what this is. Adam is naming who he is. He's going through it. He's taking responsibility. He's offering that out to everybody else. Let's not shy away from who we are. Let's not give our power over to other people. One, because they might exploit it. And two, because it's our power. It's individual power. You know what I mean? We have collective responsibility. We have individual responsibility. And sometimes we like to give both away because we don't know what to do with it. We don't have the experience. Or we're just comfortably numb, where we enjoy sitting back and just, you know, letting the train run by, you know?
Adam, just the writing process, if you don't mind me asking. I know that piece was very personal. You have other pieces up on YouTube. People can check them out. We'll embed them in the blurb for anybody who's interested. Is it just something that you've just done for a number of years, or is it something that you really are honing as a craft now?
You know, it's kind of going back. I would have started in the Axis,
yeah,
a project called Creative Space, and I had guys around me like Dan and like Stephen James Smith and like John Connors, Paul Allroy, Damien Dempsey, Maverick Sabre. These guys were in that project and giving us, all us young lads, advice and kind of sharing their crafts with us. So when I started writing in that project, that was kind of me. That project kind of allowed me to realise my creative potential, and that was where that first piece came from. That's on YouTube. And then from there, I've wrote, but you know, I had to live a bit as well, and you know, kind of figure out what I wanted to say. And then when I wrote that track, well, that piece there, kind of last October, it was done in the space of like, you know, in the afternoon. I was in work. I was supposed to be working, but I was doing that.
And you were ready to do it though, weren't you?
I was ready. I didn't have to do much. I didn't have to, like, the words kind of just flow through me. And then from there, you know, from that process, I've been able to, you know, keep the momentum. And then
So you're still writing pieces, and I like that you refer to some of them as track, refer to it as a track as well, because there's obviously, you obviously have a rhythm to it as well, which is really important. And I just know, as I said, the piece blew me away. Can I ask one cheeky question, Dean?
Yeah.
How late do you go in the water?
In the evening? Or
No. As in, like, are you still swimming down there at this?
I swim like almost every day for the last 20 years because it keeps me balanced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm going for a swim at 8 o'clock in the morning for sunrise down at Portmarnock. You feel free to join me. It's medicine. We swim so we don't drown. All that type of stuff. It's amazing. I just wanted to maybe chat about Adam for a second before we wrap up, if we're going to wrap up.
Yeah.
So I would have, as Adam said, I would have worked with him. I set up a project in Axis called Creative Space, and I would have avoided some of them, you know, people like Damo and Maverick Sabre down, but more so they would see and listen to people like Adam. you know, young guys who at the time were maybe 21, 22 years of age. And I filled a room full of them. And the older guys, John and Maverick and Damo, would have sat around for 2 or 3 hours and just listened to these guys explore their explore themselves. And a lot of the stuff that we explored was trauma and pain. And I believe that all of this, you know, white privilege, white supremacy, black power, all lives matter. As Adam says in his piece, it's all pain. It's all trauma. It's all stuff that we're all trying to process. And nobody's, in my opinion, is any worse than anybody else. Yeah, we're all lost little scared boys in, or girls inside ourselves. We all came from somewhere. We don't know where it was. We have this thing called life. It lasts 5 minutes or 50 odd years or whatever. And then we're gone. And we're all trying to deal with that. And all politics is trying to deal with that. All capitalism and consumerism is trying to deal with that. All spirituality is trying to deal with that. That's what we're trying to do. And this piece, without shoving it down your throat, offers us to start that conversation. And that's, for me, that's the real conversation. What are we really talking about? What's the stuff that we're avoiding? Where's the shame and the pain that we're really avoiding? And that's what I address when I go into the sea, because I see it every day. I see my own pain, my own shame, my own insecurity on a daily basis. And I can't help want to talk about that with other people.
Yeah, I suppose you've both used the word shame now, and it's pretty clear that when we talk about it, particularly, you know, what's expected of people, what's expected of you as a man, or you know, what you have to suck up, what you have to get on with, what you have to mean, what you have to stand for, and you know, again, going back to the can't see through the veil, doing the veil. It's a lovely use of words, but it's also quite it gives that imagery in your head as well of that. If you don't understand it as well, we have to be able to look at, see through the veil, and the veil itself can be quite a loaded term in the current parlance, as they say. When you did that, was that intentional, Adam?
Yeah.
It works brilliantly.
You have to look beyond, you know, you have to look beyond stuff and comprehend, and you know, that's it. There's a lot of meanings to it.
Oh, that's what I mean. I don't want to put you on the spot, because it's the best part of that is a bit where people can interpret it. You know, they're going to read so many different ways into that phrase. And I just thought it was quite emotive and really well put. Sorry, Dean, go ahead.
And it's a little bit cheeky as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you don't have what it takes to look past your own bullshit, shut your mouth. Yeah. If you're just coming to the conversation and you only have the me, please, 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 listen stuff, yeah? That's your veil, and it's kind of a bit selfish. So let's find the people that we're most terrified of, including ourselves, and have a conversation with them, because we are shit scared of ourselves. We are shit scared of what's going on in here, and we will get him drunk or high or introduce him to the most weirdest porn just to avoid having a real conversation with him or her. And there's a lot of veils.
I think it's great that the two of you have met and sparked off each other. And I think
Adam, run a mile.
But I also think that I know that exists in all areas, but I think it's particular to Ballymun, and I really do. I mean, I've always seen Ballymun as kind of this little hotspot of creativity and alternative thinking, and it gets such a bad rep. It's so unfair that it gets such a bad rep. It really is.
Get a bad rep for in Ballymun. Ballymun thinks it's deadly.
I'll give you a little anecdote to finish. My daughter was up there in DCU, and there was a few coaches going, and she was trying to say, she knows Ballymun in and out, and she was trying to explain to them where everything was in Ballymun. And one of the coaches actually thought Ballymun was a made-up place that their parents told them about to frighten them.
Ballymun is the big hairy man of Ireland, is it?
it's the big hairy forgotten man. That's the issue. Look, I'm we will wrap this now, but Adam Mohammed, I love the use of the name as well, where you wired it in. It was just brilliantly at the outset. Thanks so much for your time, and I do hope that you have a lot more pieces to come, because it's really powerful stuff, and I know it's gonna resonate with a lot of people. If it resonated with this old white lad, it'll resonate with a lot of people. And Dean, you keep the big hearted love all out into that world. Keep putting it out there, buddy.
Yeah, I love it. I'm putting it in here as much as I'm putting it out there. And like, this is Adam's fourth podcast, and I think it was a conscious decision from both of us to do something of this quality. Because as you know, there's a million and one podcasts out there. But some of them, some of them ring true. Some of them are for different things. This isn't just a political thing. It's also a societal thing. It's an inner journey. All the stuff that you are doing, you're helping people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really.
Well, that's very kind.
What I want to say is, it is all connected. Like the music and the amount of kind of independent podcast media popping up at the moment. It's great to see people having their own, you know, kind of controlling the narrative, as we say, and, you know.
Look, I found your piece inspiring, and I'm glad that you agreed to do this with us tonight, and I'm sure loads of people will get a lot out of it. Where can people find you, Adam?
On Instagram, Adam Mohammed Music, on Twitter, Adam M Official. And in 25 Coach UA, if you want to mask up and head down to my gaffel, make it a cup of tea.
Ah, no, Dave.
Wear the mask up.
Listen, lads, thanks so much.
If you want to wear all your veils, come down.
Exactly, yeah.
Keep up the good work, lads. Dane,
thank you very much. I'm glad you've enjoyed it. Whoever's listening to this video, go and watch Adam's piece and share it. And let's have that conversation.
We'll be back to you about the revolution, Dane. Talk to you later,
thanks,
buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
One love. No, lads.
Thanks for listening, folks. Please do consider heading over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Look, I can't make you do it, but I'm asking you, please, if you get something out of these podcasts, give something back. The content is free. That does not mean that it doesn't have value. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now.